Recordings are started.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Next Generation RDS PDP Working Group call on Wednesday, the 21st of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? Okay, hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn it back over to our chair, Chuck Gomes. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome everyone to this week's working group call. I want to say special thanks to those who are calling in the middle of the night. I see quite a few of you that are in that category. And just to share the pain, I'm doing it as well because I'm on the East Coast today. So thanks again for doing that. And happy to accommodate those of you who are almost always calling in at undesirable times. So thanks for doing that so often. So, do we have any statement of interest updates? If so, please raise your hand. Okay, then let's jump right into the agenda. You can see it in the upper right of the screen, and if we can bring up the presentation too, it'll be on the first slide there. Everybody now, it looks like everybody now has scroll control. So if you go to slide two, you will see the proposed agenda, and we'll jump right into item number two, just a brief discussion about the suggestions that were discussed on the list by, I think one of them was by Mike Pelage, regarding the possibility of getting some expert advice. And several of you commented in support of that. What the leadership team has decided is that it might be better to wait. If we do decide that's necessary, it'd probably be better to wait until we have some a few more specific recommendations that we could ask about. Also, there's a practical matter. There are no funds available for doing that right now under the current year budget, and to request funds that aren't already budgeted really ensures us we need to be able to ensure that it's really going to make a difference. We have quite a bit of expert advice that we received over the last year plus, and frankly, we haven't used a lot of that because there's still, regardless, people still haven't been ready to accept that. So at this time, we're not suggesting that we pursue that route. That doesn't mean we can't do it later, but that's the decision by the leadership team. So let's go on then to the agenda item number three, which is to try and complete deliberation on domain name certification. So if you'll go down to slide three, you'll see a slide in that regard. Now I'm trying myself to get, I'm on a smaller computer. That's why my screen isn't showing. So on slide 3, the results of the poll from last week is on the is at the link on the working group wiki. So if you haven't looked at that, feel free to do that. We're not going to pull those results up for this meeting, but rather give a really brief summary. So for question 2, the 72% of those who participated in the poll supported domain name certification as a purpose for doing some sort of processing. Okay, we didn't specify what type of processing. Does it does not necessarily mean collection. Okay, and then for question 3, about 62% either agreed or could live with the statement that domain name certification would be okay as an opt-in purpose for collection. So the 72% is getting pretty close to three quarters, but we have whereas we don't have a set number that we're looking for rough consensus, we usually try to get even a little bit higher than that. So at this point, we're not recommending declaring rough consensus on that. Hopefully, in our work ahead, we can get a little stronger support there and possibly declare that if that happens. The opposition, and I'll give members of the leadership team a chance to comment on this as well, if they'd like. We did review all the comments, and the opposition to question 2, where we had almost 75% support, seemed to center around 3 concerns. The first one was, can consensus policy for GTLD registration data specify purposes that are in the legitimate interest of third parties? In this case, certificate authorities. The second one was, does being a legitimate purpose for processing data also imply that data is collected for that purpose? And the third one was, there is a need for a greater clarity around collection of data for this purpose. So that's where the opposition was. We're not going to spend time on that unless somebody objects, talking about those things right now. Instead, we're going to move right ahead and go to slide 4, where we have another slide there, and look at the data needs, the data element needs associated with domain name certification as a possible purpose. Remember the domain name certification definition that the drafting team from last year, late last year, gave us, and it's in on slide 4 there towards the top. And so we're going to look at what registration data might be necessary for that this purpose, and is that data already collected by another compatible purpose? And then if not, should it be optionally collected for this purpose? Okay. The last bullet then on slide 4, as you can see, we're going to make at least one working group assumption, or one assumption in moving forward. You recall that we had quite a bit of discussion a few meetings ago, about the idea of whether a purpose is compatible a purpose for which data is not collected, but if it's compatible with a another purpose for which data is collected, that it appears that that would be allowable under the GDPR. Now, what we found out, and a small team was formed to look in this issue, look at this issue, and they I think are may still be doing that, and that's good. But it looks like it's going to take a while to get anything definitive on that. So, for the sake of keeping our deliberation moving, what we're going to do is we're going to assume compatibility of the domain name certification purpose with two of the purposes for which we've already identified data could be collected, and that's the technical issue resolution purpose and the domain name management purpose. Now, keep in mind, and sorry for doing so much talking, keep in mind that the we haven't gone through all the purposes, so it's possible that we will decide, at least at a rough consensus level, that other data may be collected for other purposes, but we haven't gotten there yet. If and when that happens, we'll deal with it. So that's what the very last sub-bullet says there. Okay, going on then to slide five, then we have a table that gives us some information. Now, it's important to understand what's on this table. Okay, so let me quickly review that. And I said I was going to give leadership team members a chance to comment on anything I've said so far. I forgot to do that earlier, so let me pause. Does anyone on the leadership team want to add anything to what's been covered so far? Okay. And as you can tell, Lisa cannot be with us today, but we've got Caitlin and Marika on here, so from staff, and then of course we've got our vice chairs. And it looks like at least two out of three of the vice chairs are present. Okay, not seeing any hands. I'll talk about this table. The you can see on the left there, and this is not a new table, so sorry for repeating for those who have seen this several times. You can see the column registration data needed for domain for a domain name, and then the different elements. In some cases, just categories of elements and not broken down to specific data elements. And we may talk about that a little bit later. So for the purpose of technical issue resolution, we at least reached rough consensus that the data elements marked with an X in the second column there should be collected for that purpose. Now, in the case of registrant contacts, we didn't drill down into which contacts. So at some point, we'll have to do that and drill down a little bit further. Does it mean phone contact? Does it mean email contact? Does it mean postal address, et cetera? So we didn't drill down that far yet. For domain name management, again, you see data elements or data categories X there for the ones that we reached rough consensus should be collected for that purpose. Now, what's shown in domain name certification is different, okay? We haven't reached any rough consensus on domain name certification in terms of access, as you've seen from our poll from last week, or collection. But the drafting team that worked on this purpose the end of last year identified the elements that are marked with an X as those that are used by certificate authorities from existing WHOIS. So our purpose today is to see if we can reach any sort of agreement in terms of what, if any, data elements would be appropriate for possible access for the domain certification purpose. Now, let me pause. I see Steve's got a hand up. So, Steve, you're on.
Sorry, it took a second to come off of mute. With respect to the domain name certification, the fields that are listed there are provided by the account holder. What assurance does the domain name certifier have or require that that information has any relationship to the domain name?
Well, a good question, Steve. This is Chuck, and anyone else would like to respond, feel free to raise your hand. That may come down, at least in part, to what we decide in any future RDS with regard to accuracy. That's one of our first five questions from our charter, one that we haven't spent any time on yet. But does anybody have anything to add to that? Maybe somebody that was on the design team, if you have a thought. Alex, I think you were on that drafting team, right? Go ahead, Alex.
Thanks, Chuck. Yeah, it's Alex. To answer Steve's question, I guess it depends, which is a terrible answer, but it depends on the type of certificate that is being authenticated and verified. In the case of an EV certificate, kind of a high-end, high-assurance, highly authenticated certificate, it is the job of the certificate authority to ensure that the information in the WHOIS matches information from third-party databases, and that same organization or individual, in fact, has control of the domain. So that's essentially how it works. But clearly, there's details there, and in some cases, depending on the style of certificate, that may or may not happen, especially for those certificates that just require proof of control of the domain name, which may or may not actually require any access or validation of RDS or WHOIS information. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's basically how I see it.
Go ahead.
Let me chime in. In collecting this information and saying it's for the purpose of domain name certification, there is no automatic or no intrinsic representation about the quality of that information with respect to its accuracy or the meaning of those of that field, or whether the people listed take any particular responsibility or are obliged to respond. All of those properties are left to the certificate authority to separately identify and authenticate. Are we prepared to make such a statement covering this disclaimer, basically, that I've just said, that publishing this information in the WHOIS provides no authentication as to whether this information is relevant or accurate, and hence serves in the lingo that we might use merely as what you would call a hint, and leave it to the certificate authority to take it from there?
And David, you want to respond first or Alex, either one. But David, you've got your hand up. Let me go to you.
In the case of the registrant email, the That is one of the ways that is used to confirm control by the domain name of, by the registrant. One of the ways that is used to confirm that that registrant control, who is applying the certificate, controls the domain. So it is certified as correct in that process, but it's only one process. It's not guaranteed it's ever done. And all of these, there's whatever, however they're used in the process, the certificate authority does not monitor them, so they could always be changed after the certificate is granted. Sometimes I think the certificate authority might, if some details are obviously very different, they might query them. But in general, all the information on the certificate is verified separately by the certificate authority by means outside the RDS, and they do not guarantee, the certificate authority makes no guarantee about information that is in the RDS.
Thanks, David, and I'll get back to you in a second, Steve. Let's see what Andrew wants to add.
Let's see if this works. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Thanks. I'm slightly confused about this because the certificate authority business is a competitive market, and so different certificate authorities, as I understand it, and I think this has been represented on the list as well, have different policies around how they do this. One thing that is true is that the current arrangements don't really allow a certificate authority to use the RDS as a reliable pass-through mechanism. But of course, we could actually make that a feature that is available through the RDS if we wanted to. So one of the things that seems to be missing here is the potential to enable the RDS to be valuable for these ancillary purposes that the domain name market seems to be providing. And I should just point out that, you know, Google has already announced that Chrome is going to treat HTTPS sites or HTTP sites that don't have a TLS certificate as failures in the future. That is, they're going to mark them as insecure rather than putting the padlock on. They're going to try to change their user base and convince them that everything that doesn't have HTTPS is insecure. So it does seem to me that there is some pressure on the internet to try to continue to build more security apparatus atop the DNS. And I think that basing the entire discussion on what CAs do today, according to the CAB forum, is maybe a little bit is sort of optimizing for a use case that is yesterday's rather than tomorrow's. Thanks.
Thanks, Andrew. And I suspect at least part of what you're saying is why Alex said it depends. But just a little side note, I just received a message that the chair of the CAB forum is going to join our working group. Unfortunately, he's traveling today, so whatever decisions we might come to today and any polls we have, we'll certainly call it to his attention. Of course, he's got some catching up to do since he'll be a new member in the working group, but that'll be a nice asset to have going forward. I don't think that needs to delay us making possible decisions today. But it will be nice to have him in the working group. Steve, let's come back to you.
Sorry, I was on mute. Thank you very much, Chuck. I want to align myself with what Andrew's just said and take it a step further. It seems to me there are two possible stable states in this. One, either we within the design and operation of the RDS provide a level of certainty that the information provided is meaningful, or we give it up entirely and say, why bother? In which case, the certificate authority in this case can have its own interaction with the certificate, the person requesting the certificate, and they can supply whatever information they want, and the certificate authority can do whatever validation they want. Let me draw a comparison. It's standard practice in contracts, and Chuck, now I'm entering into your territory more than mine, that toward the end of the contract, there will be something about legal notices should be sent to the following address. And that information, to my non-lawyer understanding, has real meaning. That is, it is a commitment that certain notices that are sent to that address will be treated with as having been received, and that if incorrect information is supplied in that, or if, to take the analogy that David Cake raised, if they stop paying attention to that address, change their address or whatever without giving proper notice to change the contract, then they're liable for whatever harm comes from getting formal notices that they don't pay attention to. Are we going to reach that level of of practice and commitment?
Thanks, Steve. That's a really good question, and I think we can. I mean that is an option that if the working group can reach consensus, fairly strong consensus on taking that approach, there's nothing to prevent us from doing that. That's part of, I think, why we have to, first of all, decide whether domain name certification is a legitimate purpose, looking at ICANN's mission, looking at the RDS and so forth. Is it legitimate for providing some access, not necessarily collection? We could also decide that something should be collected for this purpose. That's really what this whole exercise right now is all about, because not only from the point of view of the GDPR, but also if you look at the EWG report, and most of you are familiar with that, they used a purpose-based approach, suggested a purpose-based approach as well. So it really comes down to whether we decide, I think, whether this is a legitimate purpose for some sort of access, and if so, which data elements. Let me jump over to David.
Let me just push it that question that I'm asking is actually going to apply across the board. If we collect information and make it available, what obligations on behalf of the person supplying that information are attached to that?
Clarify me for me what you mean by what obligations or what guarantees?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought you were saying. I wanted to make sure. That may be more of a board decision than than what we might make.
That's not the board's role. That's not the board's role at all. It's the role of this group or some other group to lay out a coherent and usable and workable model. The board simply, I can speak with some authority, having been on the board for a long time, the board's role is to oversee a process and see that something sensible comes out of it, but not to impose its own value system on it.
No, I agreed with that. No argument there. But if we make a recommendation that a certain commitment should be made so that domain name certification authorities can rely on that, Of course, the board would have to approve any recommendations we make, and I think that's what I was trying to say.
Sure, but the same question will come up with respect to any other role. When you publish something as a tech contact, does that mean something?
Well, as we all know, it hasn't meant a lot historically in WHOIS because of inaccurate records. I think probably, and somebody correct me if you think I'm wrong on this, and I could very well be, we're going to probably have to deal with that more when we get to the question of accuracy. You know, if we take more steps than have been taken to date to ensure accuracy, that may impact what you're saying. And I'm probably not doing a very good job of answering your concern. But let's again let some other people jump in. David? You're on mute, David.
I think the answer to Steve's question about what are our, essentially if we took the one road and said we have no concerns about the certificate authorities, and we are not going to make any guarantees or supply them with any of this data, in anything from the RDS, or make no guarantees to them at anything in the RDS. Most of these fields we're talking about it's in the nature of a hint. It might make the process go a little faster, but if it's removed, the process is essentially unchanged, if slightly less efficient. The one exception is registrant contacts, in the sense that registrant email, in the sense that email can be used to demonstrate control. And the one, issue where it interacts on what ICANN does, if we found that those mechanism of using the email to demonstrate control of a domain name was being abused or in some way used to mess with the CA process, or to try and undermine the CA validation process, such as people who were not authorized to get a certificate somehow obtaining one, then it might become an issue where we wanted to look at that and verify, or look at what that means in terms of, I would say, our security commitment, because making sure certificates exist is arguably a significant part of ICANN's mission. It's just, before we could get the CA browser people to simply not allow that mechanism and to always use alternate mechanisms for demonstrating control, which includes, well, you normally would be directly via the DNS these days, but not always. I do think that Steve has struck on a very important issue about what ICANN's commitments in terms of the validity of the data in the DNS. I do think DNS certification isn't a very good issue to demonstrate that, because it's not a big the change really does not would not interfere with the CA browser's business very much. In many ways, it's really the opposite way around. What do the CA browsers, CA and browser forum people, what do they say? What does the DNS say to them? Or what do they say to about the DNS? I think it's an important distinction, but I'd make so little difference in the case of the domain name certification purpose that it's a poor example. And really, I think if we said, we offer, said officially to the CA browser forum, we offer absolutely no guarantee about any of the data contained in here, please don't use it, the practical effect would really be that they just stopped using email as a method to demonstrate control of a certificate. It would which really is one of alternate methods and would be relatively small change to the way the browser certification, the certification industry works.
Thanks, David. Steve, you want to jump back in before I go to Jim Galvin?
No, I think I've said what I want to say, and I'm typing some comments in the chat rather than just taking up airtime.
Thanks, Steve. Okay, Jim, you're next.
So, Jim Galvin for the record. Steve has touched on something which resonates with me, and so I wanted to call it out. I have generally been arguing against domain name certification as a reason for data, and I have said that I don't object to domain name certification being used for processing, although I still don't support it. And the reason that I've been saying that is because ICANN is not in the certificate business, and therefore we don't have a role to play in that space. Now, folks have argued that the DNS, you know, in its requirement for, in ICANN's requirement to support a secure and stable DNS, you know, certificates are sort of natural and complementary to that, if not obligatory, and therefore domain name certification should be an obvious reason to collect data. And I think Steve's comment about the fact that, and he's even writing this in the chat room here too, you know, the thing which is interesting to me is the data really just doesn't mean anything, and there's no obligation that it mean anything. It's always struck me as odd that certificates, you know, we're building this quote secure web, if you will, based on data of dubious origins, and in fact even ICANN is collecting data of dubious origins. You know, there's accuracy of the data from a syntactic point of view, and then there's accuracy of the data from the point of view of, does it really represent something? And I think this has always bothered me in this space. You know, now we could change that. I guess the real point here is if we all believe that, or, you know, if you believe that, then I think, as we've also been telling ourselves, we get to change that. And I think that's an important point to bring out here. If we really do want to support domain name certification, then I think that also obligates us to create a new kind of system where the data actually means something. And if we're not going to go down that path, then I'm going to stand strong on domain name certification not being a valid reason for data collection and always be doubtful of whether or not it's a suitable processing point. What at least the Let's Encrypt certificate vendors do is they're really more after whether or not you control the domain name. And that's how they decide whether or not you can have a certificate for that domain name. That makes perfect sense to me. But this business of whether the name for the registrant and address all makes sense, I just don't get it. Thanks.
So, Jim, Chuck, with a follow-up question. So, if I understood what you just said, wouldn't the email contact be useful for confirming that you have control of the domain name? And that, not necessarily definitively, but as one check?
I think it's a part, but it's not as definitive as whether or not you can put a text record in the DNS for the domain name. That actually demonstrates that you really do control that domain name. The email address, it's just a point of contact like your postal address, and you still need some other step, some other point of verification. You have to confirm that is in and of itself valid data, not just whether or not you control it. The email address, you can just prove whether or not you control the email address, or at least that there's a person back there. You still need to confirm it's the right person, right?
Correct. Yeah, thanks. Appreciate that, Jim. Let's go to Maxim.
Maxim, for the record, I'd like to yeah, to add to the James idea that on our registrar part of business, we often see situations where the access to the email box was compromised, and some bad actors are using that to haste domains and do get any kinds of things. So I'm not sure that in current world, mass mailbox systems are the sure way to say that it's the person who started this mailbox. It's not always works. It doesn't work this way in all occasions. And it seems to me that some of registrants, not all of them, really might need some optional fields. For example, they want to have some super strong certificate, which includes delivery of the letter with a special code they need to enter into the web portal, which proves that the mailbox they provided, I mean postal box, is the one they use. But also the influence on control of the domain is higher if the person can arrange some text record into the DNS system. It means that way more things have to be in place before this change. And it's a stronger way to ensure that the person who controls the record was the same person who asked for the certificate. Also, there is an issue if, for example, we collect some particular field for all registrants, and they really require it only to those of them who want some kind of special certificate. It means that for big number of registrants, we say that the reason of collection was this particular certificate, but we never use data for this reason. And if we use the same data fields for some any reason, it's kind of violation of consent with the registrant that this data was gathering to be used only for this reason. So I think the exit could be, no, the way to resolve it could be optional fields. And if the registrant wants to use it, they have separate consent and separate process of handling, so we don't create a situation where a large number of registrants, their data, they were told that their data were going to be used for some special reason, and in reality is used for something else. It creates issues with the privacy laws. Thanks.
Thank you, Maxim. Let's go to Andrew.
Hi, it's Andrew Sullivan again. So I feel like we may not be attending to all of the distinctions that some of our privacy and security activists have been, defense activists have been talking about on the list. I'm sort of wishing that Allison or maybe even Rod were here to try to bring some of this up. So I'm going to try to do a job of it, but I'll probably miss, and maybe others can beat me up for it afterward. When you try to identify who is doing something with you on the internet, and you need actually strong evidence about who that person is, it isn't a binary. It isn't a binary operation, right? People, the discussion so far seems to be suggesting, well, does the whois have this, or does the RDS have this information or not? But that's not quite it. The way this works, in my experience anyway, is that people have a bunch of heuristic pieces of evidence. And if they fit together in a package, according to, you know, some data gathering and some algorithms, then you believe at that point that the person you're or the supposed person you're talking to is in fact the person you think you're talking to, and you have some sort of Bayesian probability distribution about, you know, how likely that is. And I think that the way the RDS works today is that more evidence across multiple domains and across multiple users and so on is what those kinds of people are doing. And that's one of the things that, as I understand it, certificate authorities are doing. So I'm a little uncomfortable with this idea that this is a kind of binary switch where, oh, well, you look up the account, and if they, you know, if the email address matches, then you're fine. I don't believe that any CA works that way. And for EV certificate providers, I think they're doing quite a lot more work than that. One of the things they do is exactly one of the things that Steve mentioned in the chat. They get you to put something in a zone file, and then they look it up. Everybody who uses Google Apps or Google Docs or anything like that today, with their own corporate system, look it up. At the top level of your domain, there's a TXT record that has to do with Google. That's what that is. So every provider is already asking you to show that you have control over that DNS record. But this is a different problem. It's not control over the DNS that we're talking about. The question is, do you also have control over the registrar account, and do you have control over what goes into the registry for that domain? And what goes into the registry for that domain, you can't put arbitrary text records on the parent side of the DNS. And so there's a legitimate question about whether you have, you know, just because you have control over the DNS for a given domain name right now, does that mean you have legitimate control over that domain name and its registration? And I think that the RDS has always been about the legitimate control over the records that should be in the official record, rather than the things that are actually in the DNS, and gaps between what's actually in the DNS and what's in the RDS are a good clue that there's something wrong. And so, to the extent that we're unable to provide some mechanism by which those two things can be linked up, we're failing the people who are building security models on top of this, and that most definitely includes, you know, the certificate authorities and the browsers and everybody else who's dependent on X509 certificates on the internet. So it seems to me that we need to provide some mechanism for this. That doesn't mean that it's, you know, everybody's name and address and telephone number, but it means that we do need to have some mechanism that we're providing here that allows for X509 certificates to be linked up between the actual behavior in the DNS and the legitimate control over the registration of that domain name. And that is exactly where the RDS lives. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. This is Chuck. So if I understood you correctly, Andrew, you're suggesting that some sort of access to some RDS data elements would you believe it would be useful. Did I conclude too much there?
It's more than just useful. The current environment on the internet has built a large trust framework around domain names. And one of the gaps in that framework has to do with the link between the control over the domain name itself, that is, in the DNS, the control over the zone file, if you will, and the control over the domain. And at the time of certificate issuance, and further at the time of validation of whether this certificate remains valid, there is some validation that needs to be done there. The second of those, that is, when you're doing this validation all the time of checking whether the people who were in control of this domain name when the certificate was issued, are they still in control of it? That remains quite problematic. There are a few tricks to it right now. We have some support for it, but it's not. Yes, is in fact that link, particularly if we use RDAP, because it can be cryptographically assured from end to end, we could actually provide greater strength to the to the certificate authority system and the certificate system that we're using even today, a strength that we don't currently have. There's a gap right now in the system when if somebody manages to subvert your registrar account, they can take over your DNS operation and issue all kinds of new things, and you have a serious problem there. But if there were additional links there, cryptographic links that were outside of that system, but that were published within the system, then it would be even harder to subvert it. So it's not merely useful. It's actually a link that we're missing today, and it could provide something. So I I'm not doing justice to this argument. I think it's one of the arguments that some of our colleagues on the list have been trying to argue. Maybe they haven't been putting it across as well as think that this is actually one of the areas where the current heuristic models that people are doing are trying to produce that information. And maybe what we need to do is provide a positive bit within the system so that it's easier to do rather than it being some sort of heuristic that people have to work out for themselves.
So, Andrew, a follow-up question again, and I'll get to David. So are you possibly thinking of a new data element that should be in the RDS? And by the way, let me qualify, Stephanie. We're not talking about collecting. We'll get there eventually, probably, but we're not necessarily talking about collecting things, although if it's a new data element, it would have to be collected for some reason. But we're not there yet, so don't worry about the processing, including collection. We will have to deal with that, but nobody's, at this point, at least in my understanding, is suggesting that we would collect it for this purpose. So just responding to some of the comments in the chat. Now, Andrew, are you talking about a possible new data element or data elements that would facilitate the domain name certification purpose?
It might be new element or new elements, and it might be optional ones that are useful in the cases where somebody is trying to get higher value certification under a CA and otherwise is not necessary. So this doesn't, I mean, it does, of course, at that point have privacy implications because you're revealing something, but it's also something that you're revealing on purpose, in the interest of gaining some other thing, and presumably you're doing that willingly and thoughtfully rather than just collecting everything all the time. I think that this has been the other area where we've struggled a little bit because sometimes we talk about elements as though everybody has to provide them. And these are, I imagine, and I'm, this is only sort of proto-imagining, so I don't know that I'm all the way there, but I sort of imagine that these are elements that are not required of anybody, but that are required to be possibly collected. It's possible to... every registrar is required to be able to pass them through or to be able to collect them or something. And under those circumstances, a registrant can provide them such that they can be useful for the rest of the internet ecosystem without necessarily requiring that anybody participate in this. Of course, it could be that if you don't participate in it, then you are scored badly on, reputation analyses or something like that. But that's your choice, and I don't want to prescribe what people must do. I just want to ensure that we build a system that actually provides the necessary infrastructure so that the shared operation can respond appropriately. And I think that's what I have in mind. So, I mean, the short answer is, yes, this might be a new data element or new collection of data elements, but I don't think they're new mandatory elements for anyone to provide, even though they might be mandatory elements for people to provide the capacity to collect.
Thanks, Andrew. So the third question in last week's poll tried to deal with the whole optional thing. Now, we got about two-thirds of the people that kind of went with at least one version of the wording, and some of the wordings were not really very different, as many of you noted in the poll. When I responded to the poll, one of the things, and I'll throw this out, it was one of my comments, I think it was to question three, that in the case of optional, there's a couple of different ways to approach it. You could require registrars to always collect it, but you would never give any access unless the registrant opted for giving, for example, certificate authorities access, assuming those could be credentialed or whatever term we want to use. But it seemed to me, reflecting on the data minimization principle that's at least part of the GDPR, that it would be better, and I guess I'm just throwing this out for reaction, to only collect elements, optional elements, if the registrant opted in to have them collected and a possible access given. But I'm curious, is that a meaningful distinction to make? That would certainly, you would collect less data that way. You would only collect it if the registrant opted in. Does that make any sense? David's had his hand up for a while. You can think about that. If anybody wants to respond, feel free. David, go ahead.
I just want to clarify a bit about what Andrew is talking about, in that, I mean, I'm not really, I see where some of the things that the process we're talking about now, verifying domain name control via using register and email and so on, could be described as a bit of a heuristic. And there may be some issues as we become more aware of the need for validation of data. But the system that seems to be replacing that is to cut the RDS out entirely. That is to connect certificate validation, which obviously can then be used for other things, with to demonstrate control using a specific text record in the DNS. There's a specific there's a protocol now that's sort of standardized, or we're working on the standardization process to do that, but it's a defined protocol. Is this gap that Andrew is talking about a gap? Is it a gap that is best removed by adding things to the RDS, or is it best removed by removing the RDS from that process of connecting a certificate to a domain entirely? I'm asking for clarification, really.
And David, is that a clarification from Andrew that you're looking for?
Yes.
Okay. No. Okay. I can. It's Andrew again. I can speak to that. The ACME protocol that you're talking about does this automatically, and the traditional domain name validation thing, it does just check whether you have control over the domain name, and certificate authorities who do either organizational validation or extended validation, you know, and the EV is the thing that makes the address bar green and all the rest of it, to the extent that that continues to be true, those are all additional efforts that are an attempt to show that the certificate holder that you're talking to really is the person or the entity that you think you're talking to. So, and this is why I was talking about heuristics, right? The goal is not, the goal of all of the OV and EV approaches is not to provide kind of, you know, transcendental under the eye of eternity certainty that you're talking to the right entity, but to provide a very high level of probability that either you're talking to that organization or you're really, really, we're sure, talking to that organization. That's basically the definition, the difference between OV and EV. And I think that the reason that many of these distinctions came into effect, because back in the day, of course, DV was all you got. The reason that these kinds of validations came into effect was precisely because you couldn't rely on the evidence from domain name validation to give you evidence that you were talking to the real entity. Now, when you're talking to your bank, that counts for a great deal. And the problem is that humans, normal users, can't really tell the difference between DV and OV and EV and all the rest of it. And yet we want something along those lines. And, of course, for the domain name industry, of whom I guess many people here are participants in that industry, it's very important that trust model continue to grow and be useful. So either for additional
you broke off a little bit, so the last sentence or so that you said, Andrew, didn't come through.
I'm sorry. Is this better?
Yes.
Either we're going to provide the necessary mechanisms in the RDS to build those kinds of assurances, or else the industry is going to move on. But if they're going to move on, they're going to build those assurances without respect for domain names. They're just not going to use domain names as the basis for this, because it becomes obvious that domain names are a lousy way to do it. And I guess the problem is that domain names are the foundation for both the resolution part and for the X509 certificate part right now. And so we have the opportunity to build the relevant infrastructure underneath all of this to increase that kind of trust. But if we don't do it, I think the industry will move on.
Thanks, Andrew. Well, now I want to bring you back to the table on slide 5 there. If we, as a working group, decide that there should be some access, controlled access, to some elements of the RDS for this purpose, which ones would it be? And let's focus on the ones with X's right now. Which elements, and I'll let you raise your hand to respond to this, but which, if any, of the elements that have X's next to them, and we don't have to restrict ourselves to those, but let's start there, do you think would be legitimate for giving access, assuming you could control that access, to domain name certificate authorities? Which ones of those data elements do you think we would include in that list? And leadership team members, if you can word that better than I did, please feel free to do so. Steve, go ahead.
Yeah, so Chuck, which of these elements are we prepared to offer to the certificate authority some level of assurance about? And if we're not prepared to offer assurance about them, then what value is it to either the account holder or the certificate authority? Let them have their own interaction on this.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. So this is Chuck again. And so, in other words, if we recommend some access, it would only be meaningful if we offer some assurances as to what they're getting. I think that's clear. And if, assuming we offered assurances, would you pick some of those data elements?
I don't know. You know, you'd have to start from scratch. And I mean, from my point of view, the current use of the terms admin and technical point of contact and billing point of contact and even registrant start out as having no particular meaning whatsoever, except that those are names of fields that the account holder has filled in. So I think it'd be best to start with a clean slate. What information does the registrant does the account holder want to supply? What is the what representations is the account holder making about the meaning of those, and what level of assurance is being provided? As it is now, these are simply fields that are being filled in. No assurance is being given except the very weak one that somebody's done a syntax check to see if it really is an address or it really is a phone number, et cetera. And the whole thing is extraordinarily squishy. Viewed from that perspective, something I've said several times and probably say several times again, it's amazing that the system works as well as it does. Rather than decrying the inaccuracy, I would applaud the fact that as much of it is accurate as it is. Certainly the bad guys have no interest in improving the accuracy, and there's nothing we're doing that makes it particularly hard for them to keep a low profile and supply the minimum amount of likely looking information that has no validity whatsoever.
Thanks, Steve. And by the way, and this was before you were on the working group and others as well, but one of the agreements we came to a long time ago was all of these terms, however we use them, have to be very explicitly defined. So I think there's agreement in the working group that if we're going to use registrant, if we're going to use the term admin contact or technical contact, that we have to, and any terms we use, we're going to have to make sure in the end that there's no ambiguity in terms of what we're talking about. So we'd have to do that.
Well, that's very helpful, but let me ask why you say in the end, why not in the beginning? Because if I don't know what they mean, then I don't know how to have this discussion about whether the information should be collected and who should have access to it.
Yeah, it's a chicken and egg problem that we continually deal with. Stopping at the time, I think, and leadership team, please jump in, help me if you think I'm not saying this right, but spending time on the definitions at the time, I guess we decided that it was so quite a ways back, but I think we decided that defining them may be hard until we get further down the line. Now, that may be wrong. Okay, that was a decision that was made there.
Well, the benefit of being new to this discussion, but having been around for a long time, without any embarrassment, let me say, I think it was wrong not to try to define these things. And I think in the process of trying to define them, you're going to find that there's some fundamental questions that you have to face. And if you are able to define what they mean, and including what operational roles they have and what responsibilities and authority they have, then I think the rest of this discussion about what uses and what level of access and so forth will become much, much simpler, much more straightforward.
Okay, so you definitely believe we should define each of the things in the first column in this table now, or soon.
Well, so and decide whether they belong in the first column. And I think further, let me raise the ante. I think once you go down that path, the GDPR problem goes away.
Okay. Now, I don't think, except maybe for Andrew's comments, that I've heard, you know, we had nearly three quarters of the people who responded to the poll, and that was only 25 people, I know. That's more than we have on this call. Supported some sort of access for this purpose to RDS data elements that need to be defined. I haven't really heard from people that are in that, except in that 75% category or 72%, whatever it was. Are there none of those people on this call that support access?
Yeah. Let me raise the ante even further. I don't want to be particularly unpleasant, but I'm reminded of some state legislature that decided that the value of pi should be 3.00 because that would be more convenient. That doesn't change the facts of the matter. It's just an expression of interest by some set of people. I think we're in territory here where first you've got to have a logically meaningful discussion and not just a poll of people saying, yeah, I think it should be this or no, I think it should be that.
Okay. That's fair. And well, Andrew, your hand went down. Go ahead.
Sorry, it's Andrew again. I'm having apparently connectivity in Toronto has just completely failed today, but so I'm sorry if I drop in and out again. I don't think that these polls have been polls in the sense of popularity contests. I think they have been, attempts to take a sounding of people's arguments. And I suspect that the reason we're having trouble with this case is along the lines of what I've already tried to argue. That is, people feel that there is something in the domain name space where we would like certificates to work, and yet nobody believes that, you know, finding out your home address in order to solve that problem is the right answer. And so maybe the difficulty is that we have been going at this with the structures that we already have in the existing WHOIS, rather than trying to tackle this from the point of view of figuring out what kinds of things we need. And so, Chuck, when you asked me earlier, well, are you suggesting new data elements or something? I think it may be something along those lines. And maybe the problem is that the difficulty that I've been having in expressing this is that I'm not quite sure what it is that I'm thinking about, but it does feel to me like we have been working through this, you know, with the basis on the basis of the stuff we already have, and is it in or is it out? And maybe the problem is, you know, if we try from the other direction, how do we solve this use case? What fields or what kinds of fields would be useful, rather than what fields in the WHOIS today would be useful. what kinds of stuff would be useful, maybe that would be a way to make some progress on this area.
Okay. Daniel, go ahead.
Daniel for the record. I hope I can be heard clearly.
Yes.
I would like to say that the polls have been great for discussions and helping to drive consensus during the during this deliberation process. When it comes to most of the cases that Steve is speaking about, we discuss all these things, the different use cases of the different data elements. We went ahead and also discussed the verification of the data elements, the addresses, the email addresses, and what comes in. So in these cases, how are we going to be able to drive consensus? Because already the issues that are coming from the WHOIS are affecting the different users at different levels. And also putting into consideration the GDPR that is coming in to protect the data elements of the European citizens, we have to make sure that we come into compliance with all these against other laws. So if we look at the technical contact, the administrative contact, just and the other fields that are coming into the data elements, then the user does not even mind about filling in these fields because they only use only one point of contact, yeah? And others even don't know even what is happening in the background. So I think we have to come up with a way of how these data elements can be able to, how can I put it so simply, like, the word has jumped from my head. When I recall, I'll get back to you. Thank you. Back to you, Chuck.
Okay. Thanks, Daniel. And because that's what I was trying to get us to head towards, some data elements. I'm going to do something a little bit different. Let's go to slide 6. I don't know if this helps or not, but we thought it might. Whether it helps and where we're at right now, I'm not convinced myself. But on slide 6 is a set of tentative working group agreements that we've reached so far, some of them quite a while ago, that kind of impact that table you were looking at, especially not only for the 3 purposes we're looking at now, but future ones as well. Notice that, and I'll go through these quickly because you can read them, but 47, we decided previously that the following information will be collected for the purpose of technical issue resolution associated with domain name resolution, and that's where that's basically what was checked off in that first column under technical issue resolution. And then we did the same thing for domain name management in agreement 49, and that was what is in the column for domain name management. 31 then was data enabling at least one way to contact the registrant must be collected and included in the RDS. Okay, that's kind of a broad agreement, but we did reach agreement on that. 30 was at least one element identifying the domain name registrant, what we're calling the registered name holder, must be collected and included in the RDS. Back to Steve's suggestion on definitions. Correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't domain name registrant pretty well defined in contracts and so forth in the ICANN world? It seems to me it is, but maybe I'm wrong. Does anybody disagree with that? I agree that technical contact and admin contact, even billing contact, based on some of the discussion we had on the list this past week, may not be as well defined. But isn't domain name registrant pretty well defined in agreements and other documents in our world? Steve, go ahead. We're not hearing you, Steve, so looks like you're off mute. But
yes, I was. Well, I'm calling in via Skype, separate control for the mute. When the registrar has an issue with the person controlling the domain name. Does he use the registrant information, or does he use the information in his records as to who the account holder is?
Well, account holder is a new term we're using, okay? So, and I don't have anything against that term, but the registrant, like, for example, with regard to domain name transfers, just to use one example, I think it's pretty well defined. Now there are registrars and registrants on this call. If you disagree with that, and Stephanie uses the term registered name holder, I think that's synonymous with registrant, but what do others think? Go ahead, Steve.
Well, if in the case of transfers, and I'm not 100% up to speed, but I think that there is a defined role, and email sent to an address that's listed there needs to be responded to, and if it's not responded to, it's taken as implicit consent or something like that. And as I say, I apologize for not being 100% up to speed. But before we get into the details of those particular functions, the point that I'm making is that and the term account holder is the person who actually has the keys to interacting with the registrar. So I use GoDaddy, for example, for some of my domains, and I have some credentials for interacting with GoDaddy. I have an account and a password and so forth. And GoDaddy presumably knows how to reach me. And if the information I've given GoDaddy about how to reach me isn't good, when they try to reach me and they fail, bad things are going to happen to me probably. The information that I publish and label as registrant is really my choice, and I don't know that there's anything that forces, I don't know anybody who checks to see whether the information that I supply as the registrant information is in any way related to the information that GoDaddy has about me as the account holder.
Okay, so you're using okay, so I see the difference between account holder and your relationship with the registrar and what we call in who is and things in the past as the registrant, and those two may be different. I don't think we can go down the path of getting the account holder information that the registrar has for you as their individual customer in the RDS. But so are you thinking that maybe registrant isn't defined enough?
Yes, I'm thinking registrant is not defined enough, and okay. I'm not sure why you say we can't get the account holder information into the RDS. Look at it from a slightly more holistic point of view. The account holder hands over quite a bit of information to the registrar, and some of that goes to the registry. Some of that is the technical information for the domain operation, the name service, and so forth, and some of it is sensitive information about billing, credit card numbers, and so forth, and some of it is this very squishy, otherwise unnecessary information, unnecessary in the sense that neither the registry nor the registrar needs it or uses it. It's just put there for historical reasons and has some accumulated imputed meaning and practices associated with it, but it's not intimately related to the relationship with the registrar or the registry. If you start from a clean slate, one would say, well, why bother doing any of that? If you really want to contact the person who has control of the domain name, why not have exactly the same information that the registrar has?
Okay. No, I get it. Thanks. I appreciate you taking the time to explain that. Now, we're just about out of time. Really quickly, I'd like you to look at the rest of the agreements 32 through 36 there, not in any particular order, as you can tell, as not numerical order anyway. Keep those in mind. Now, I don't think we have any basis for a poll this week. If somebody thinks of one, that would be great. We're going to have to figure out some way forward. Now, hopefully next week we'll have the CAB chair on the call as well. What I'm going to suggest is that the leadership team regroup on this one and see if we can figure out, and also figure out a suggestion for better defining the terms. I won't say better, defining the different types of contacts. So, that's going to be hard to do on phone calls like this. So I'll ask the leadership team to meet on that. Now, for the sake of the leadership team and staff, if you could help me on this, let's do a doodle poll to see if we can't find a slot, not too late on Friday for David's sake, since he's in Australia, to do a meeting before our regular Monday meeting, because I think this is going to take more time than our usual meeting time. So the action item out of this is for us to absorb, the leaders to absorb the what's gone on and see if we can put our heads together and come back with some recommendations in terms of how to proceed on this and how to proceed on definitions. And hopefully that'll help us on other purposes we have to deal with as well. So excellent participation and discussion. I know we haven't made any progress in terms of further agreements, but we got to get it right, and we'll keep trying. So is there anything else we need to cover on this call before I adjourn this meeting? The action items are mainly for the leadership team to try and come back. And by the way, as always, if any of you have suggestions and how we might be able to zero in on some progress here with regard to this purpose, it's absolutely welcome. And several of you have made suggestions like the definitions and some of the things that Andrew said, and we'll take those into consideration. Okay. Steve, is that an old hand, or did you want to add something?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's an old hand.
That's all right. We all do it. So, okay. Thanks, everybody, and a pretty good participation for our off-cycle call. And the leadership team has a big action item, and we'll try and come up some ways that will help us move forward. That said, the recording can stop and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Today's meeting has been adjourned. Operator Kim, would you please stop the recordings? And everyone, have a good rest of your day or night. Thank you.